There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We've bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesmandel, and I'm your host. On today's program, Tribune Company declares bankruptcy. Why? What does it mean? Is this really mean it's the comeuppance for media consolidation? Or just another bump on the deregulation highway? To help me suss it all out, we'll have Mitchell Shapanchik from Chicago Media Action. He's been paying a lot of attention to Tribune over the years. And you'll have lots of wisdom to lay on us. You do want to stay tuned. Well, Mitchell, thanks for joining me again here on the Media Geek radio program.
Thanks for having me, Paul. Great to be with you.
And I guess it's probably been a busy couple days for you in the research department now that since Tribune declared bankruptcy on, was it on the 9th of December?
The filing actually took place this past Monday, which would have made it the 8th.
Okay.
Yeah. So the filing actually was filed when the Delaware court, because it's incorporated in Delaware, actually.
Of course.
Just this past Monday. So it's been 3 days.
3 days as we go to air here on WNUR. And so let's take a look at this, because a lot has happened with the Tribune Company in the last 12 months. In that 12 months, the Tribune Company found a new owner. It transferred. And a lot of people looked at this new track of ownership as possibly helping to rescue the company, which was already foreseeing some financial troubles. So maybe you could be willing to take us back a few steps and go to before the transfer of power here.
Oh, sure. Let's just back up, not quite as far back, just to set a little bit of the context. The new owner here we're referring to is that of Chicago area real estate magnate and billionaire Sam Zell, who had been basically made his money, billions of it, in real estate, and had a notorious reputation for cutting costs and doing everything you can to wring money out of usually real estate properties in this case. So we thought, okay, he lands the Tribune, which is desperate for an owner, especially since there was a shareholder revolt. Plus, also, there had been some pressure from various corners to keep the company local. They didn't want to have, like, Rupert Murdoch buy it out, for example. So it seemed like a pretty cool deal to have this local guy who had a reputation for resuscitating struggling properties to be the owner.
But when you talk about properties, you're not talking about in the figurative sense. You know, you're talking about actual property.
That's right. No, these physical, you know, like a house or,
right.
You know,
or large buildings,
you know, housing
malls.
Developments or something like that.
Yeah,
no, no, I mean, that's literally true. That's what this guy's bread and butter. Yes, I can talk. I am on the radio. And bread and butter was and for a great extent is. So he comes into the fray. He basically funds the purchase through a lot of debt, and this is key here, to basically bring this in, and he basically says, okay, give me like a year's amount of time, I'll get the company shipshape. In fact, almost to the day that the deal is finalized, as far as Zell coming into the fray, he announces that he puts up for sale the Chicago Cubs baseball team, which the Tribune Company had owned since the early 1980s. And the thinking there was that they'd be able to sell that off with, like, by the end of the year or after the baseball season in 2007, mind you. And here we are in December 2008, and the Tribune still owns the Chicago Cubs, but that's another story. He basically leverages, basically gets a bunch of debt to bring into fray, bring into purchasing the Tribune, and then tries to make whatever maneuvers, usually in the order of trying to keep whatever properties he had, and also do, to a great extent, what was already being done anyway with regards to layoffs of working journalists in order to cut corners, basically within the internal operations of the Tribune Company. And basically playing the same kind of one-note Wurlitzer that was played in the years right before Sam Zell basically entered the fray with regards to the Tribune.
So the Tribune has already seen rounds of layoffs as the company engorged itself, buying up such properties previously like the Los Angeles Times.
Right. I mean, and the Times itself was actually part of a package of newspapers that was bought when the Tribune acquired the Times Mirror Company in 2001. There, the arrangement that the Tribune made at the time was, okay, we're going to get these temporary arrangements for these TV newspaper duopolies, where the Tribune would own TVs and newspapers in a single city, in four different cities, in New York City, in Los Angeles, in Southern Florida, and in Hartford, Connecticut. Mind you, all of which were illegal because there was and still remains a law in the books, the cross-ownership rule, that says that no company can do that. And that was actually implemented in the 1970s to reduce media concentration because that kind of concentrated power was seen as anathema to a diverse media and to a general positive media environment.
And a lot of these were grandfathered, though, when the particular rule, the FCC, went into effect.
In the case of Chicago, yes, because it turns out that the Tribune itself dates back to 1847, and WGN Television dates back to about 1948. And so, yeah, it turns out that the Tribune had owned that before the implementation of this rule, and it was able to actually get that exemption in Chicago. But within the new these new properties that were being acquired in cities across the United States, and within just the last few years, different story. And that's exactly why a lot of people had come in, why the Tribune had come into criticism as basically saying one thing but doing something very different. And moreover than that, it turns out that in the subsequent years, the Tribune had pushed mightily hard at the Federal Communications Commission to basically all but remove the remaining vestiges of media ownership rules that remained in the book that prevented one company from having cross-ownership, not just within a given city, but across the United States. And the Tribune was basically banking on this as its main operational strategy for its future, basically.
What you're saying is that the Tribune Company, through acquiring Times Mirror and pursuing other properties, ended up with television stations and newspapers in the same market, something which is otherwise not permitted, under FCC rules. FCC doesn't have any say over newspapers, but it does have a say over over TV stations, and it can therefore regulate from that way, and was therefore banking on the ability to maintain these duopolies and possibly have new ones to go out and buy television stations in cities where I had newspapers or vice versa to create additional duopolies. It was really just hedging all their bets on something which was not yet legal.
Correct. And that's where the gamble there, that's where not only was they're considered like they were going to win that fight. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, especially given the muscle that they had, the air of deregulation that was pervasive in Washington, the alignment of political forces within Congress, within the White House, and within key members of the court system where this would be in play, plus also the media itself, which could raise a hue and cry about this, was basically effectively mum on this issue precisely because they were going to cash in humongously on the outcome. Mm-hmm. And so, it turns out that they had a humongous vested interest in this set of circumstances. But there was one factor that did not come into play that was not taken into account of, the public, especially political activists like those involved with the group I'm in part of, Chicago Media Action, which basically did everything we could think of to raise a hue and cry, to spread the word about this, and to make it an issue. And that's exactly what happened. It turns out that that, along with a couple of lucky breaks that we got along the way in the course of about 2002 and 2003, flipped the circumstances tremendously so that by the time the dust settled on the docket with regards to the media ownership rewrite that there was the FCC tried to attempt that would overturn this cross-ownership rule that the Tribune was hoping to abolish, some 3 million people had entered the fray on this docket. And that historically is orders of magnitude larger than the FCC has ever seen in its entire 70-plus year history.
Right, and this happened in 2002, 2003, where people told the FCC overwhelmingly, no, don't loosen the ownership rules. We don't want the same company owning, you know, multiple TV stations, radio stations, and the newspapers in our cities. We want to have a diversity of news. We want to have multiple voices, and we don't want to risk that, you know, we're going to see the same exact stories written by the same exact people on the front page of our newspaper that we hear on the radio that we then see on our nightly news.
Precisely. And the FCC, true to form, ignored by a 3-2 vote that outpouring of popular dissent and ferment on that issue. Congress took a much larger paid a lot more attention to that fact and actually had taken some legislative actions to try to curtail some of the worst aspects of what the FCC tried to do. What actually did stop the FCC and the Tribune, by extension, regarding this media ownership rule rewrite, including the cross-ownership rule, was a court order that was actually filed in Philadelphia the day before the rules were slated to go into effect on September 4th. And the courts in Philadelphia actually acknowledged the fact that a million people, in their words, actually wound up being about 3 million people by the time the dust settled, but they said about a million people spoke up about this issue. Doesn't that matter? I mean, whether or not you actually think the case has any merit or not, don't you think that matters?
And on top of that, looked at the research reports which the FCC had commissioned and found them to be skewed and oftentimes did not actually justify the changes that the FCC wanted to make, which is something which is happening still because the FCC, a few years later, about a year ago, released a last-minute rule that would permit more of these newspaper television duopolies. They put aside all the other decisions that they tried to make, all the other rules changes and loosening that they tried to put forward in 2003. And in 2007 said, well, let's just have more television newspaper duopolies. And that decision is caught up in being challenged in court. But what that all adds up to then is that what you're saying is that Tribune, you know, is banking in these regulatory changes to allow it, you know, to basically take in more ad revenue by owning more ad generating properties, which is going to run at a greater savings by getting rid of staff and combining newsrooms and basically slimming down. And that doesn't quite work out.
There's a great irony regarding those very studies that you mentioned, the half-baked studies that the FCC cooked up in order to justify the basically after the fact what they wanted to do with regards to these changes in media ownership. Those very half-baked studies were actually used by the prosecution in the subsequent lawsuit after the stay was granted to actually win the lawsuit that actually overturned the media ownership rule rewrite.
Right, used by the Media Access Project.
They were actually
which
wound up being the best ammo
right
by the media activist community and by the Media Access Project, the law firm out of Washington, D.C. that actually filed suit. And it turns out that, ironically enough, we could thank the FCC for these half-baked studies. Mm-hmm. But going back to the Tribune, it turns out that while all of this is happening, the Tribune banks its future on these media ownership rule changes. They don't get. They file a number of appeals are filed, all of which wind up failing. 2006 rolls around. Suddenly the summer rolls around, and then you suddenly see this freakout among Tribune shareholders, in particular the Chandler family, a very prominent, well-connected family out of Los Angeles, who basically say, okay, you've been wasting our time. You said that 3 years ago you were going to deliver on this stuff, and we were going to be rolling in dough by now, and that hasn't happened. We want an ownership change. And they basically muster up enough support among other shareholders, demand an ownership change, and they wind up getting it. And that's actually how Sam Zellin is the phrase, because in the course of that entire revolt that, we'll dump our current ownership and try to find new ownership. And so they actually go shopping around, and it turns out that sweepstakes, Sam Zell winds up being the winner, except that his reputation kind of preceded him, and his experience with regards to media properties, thinking that you could treat that kind of like real estate, winds up basically leading the Tribune further along in terms of a very poor trajectory about its long-term prospects. And that's basically where it's been in the last year or so, where there's this debt that's basically accrued. You don't really see much progress on it. Meanwhile, the business community is starting to freak out generally with regards to Tribune's own prospects. This past August, you actually see a downgrading of Tribune stock, and also business analysts make announcements saying that the Tribune could well default on their debt by the end of the year. Now, here's what's interesting about that. Even though this past year, the Tribune, and not this past year, this past week, even though this past week, on December 8th, when the Tribune actually does file bankruptcy, they actually had about $70 million lined up for an immediate payment that they needed to have to make with regards to having to oblige by their debt obligation. And yet the Tribune decides to file for bankruptcy, thinking apparently, although this has not really come out, but my reading of the situation is they think that maybe, as you would see, sometimes companies will go into bankruptcy, put a freeze on all of their transactions, and think that they could just come out better than ever. And plus, they don't also have, you know, pesky union contracts or all of these debts that they have to oblige by, and think that they can actually make a, you know, lean, mean, streamlined, powerful company to that comes out of it. I'm not quite sure that actually is going to be the case, especially where a lot of the people who the Tribune owes money to are among the most potent forces within the banking industry. I mean, like the leading creditor to the Tribune turns out to be J.P. Morgan Chase, which itself has been buffeted tremendously by the financial roilings that we've seen on Wall Street within the last 3 or so months. And it turns out that two other prominent creditors within the banking industry are also among the leading creditors to the Tribune. So these are people who have a lot of muscle and are not really in a much of a position to be messed around with. And I'm wondering if the Tribune might be miscalculating, thinking that they may be able to get away with the kind of action that they're doing, thinking that they could blow off their current obligations by filing bankruptcy and think that they'll be able to, that their future will be, they'll be able to emerge out of it at some point in the future.
And I'm going to hold it right there for a second and remind everyone, you are listening to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. I'm Paul Riesmanell. I'm your host. And today I'm talking with Mitchell Shapanchik. He's from Chicago Media Action, and we're taking a look at the Tribune Company bankruptcy, something which is very important here in Chicago, where Media Geek originates, but really important nationwide, one of the largest media companies in the United States. And so, Mitchell, one of the things which Tribune would claim and a lot of commentators are saying about the newspaper business specifically, but about broadcast media too, is that, well, it's the internet, right? That Craigslist has taken away the very lucrative classified ad revenue. Ads are down. People aren't reading newspapers anymore. They want to read them online. They want everything for free. And so it's this changing media environment, and certainly the argument which Tribune and a lot of other companies made to the FCC, and which, you know, the FCC's own chairman tried to make was, and given this environment then, with all this internet competition, the only way which a company like Tribune is going to survive is by consolidating, by having these multiple properties. Because you see, it's not a matter of how many newspapers and television stations, but then how many thousands of blogs and other websites are there in a city like Chicago or Los Angeles that people can turn to as well. There's much more competition out there, and they're just getting hammered by the internet. What about that argument? I mean, what do you say to that? You know, isn't that partially or mostly responsible for the Tribune Company's woes?
Well, you can ask that. The American Newspaper Association actually addressed that very point, at least within the last year. Within the last, like, 4 months or so, it's kind of gotten a little bit more hazy. But consistently throughout this whole time where this line with regards to the internet playing a role as far as the downturn and perhaps even the collapse of the American newspaper industry. Now, there is something to be said that things like Craigslist and the internet and independent media on the internet have played a role as far as taking a bite out of the previously absolute dominance that the newspaper industry had. But there is something to be said that the American Newspaper Association said that the newspaper industry still was doing quite well. It turns out that a lot of S&P 500 companies that are newspaper-related businesses are not only doing well, but comparatively speaking, they're doing really well. In fact, just last week, there was a leak from the Gannett line of newspapers where they actually somebody apparently had gotten a hold of the profits that were basically accrued by more than 40 Gannett-related newspapers in 2007. Now, there's something where they actually went through all the newspapers, and it turns out that about 40 of them actually had double-digit profit margins. Not only were they turning in a profit, they were turning in, especially these days, huge profits. And there is something to be said about having that newspaper where most people, when people refer to sources of news, the internet is there and has been growing as a resource, but overwhelmingly it's still the daily newspaper and television broadcasts that are and have been and remain the key sources of news for the great majority of people. Now, there is something to be said with regards to whether or not that argument about the current financial viability of newspapers holds water, especially in the last 4 months. I mean, there have been news reports that have been broken about where newspaper ad revenues and revenues generally have really taken a nosedive. And so what I've been saying may not necessarily apply in the last 4 months, but that's comparable to the economy generally.
Well, I was about to say, I mean, they're saying the same thing about broadcast television, broadcast radio, and they're even starting to say it about internet ad revenue. So, you know, while certainly I think it's fair to say newspapers are suffering, it's also fair to say that a lot of suffering is widely experienced.
Right.
That it seems to be hitting the media sector as a whole, not just newspapers. And so with these sorts of profit potentials, then, what's up at Tribune? Then is it really much more of a wanting to eke out more profit? Is it at a place like Gannett, double digit profit isn't enough? It needs to be higher than that.
That, I think, is the assessment there, and where you're actually seeing the newspaper industry, and not just the newspaper industry, but a lot of those capitalists who think that they could basically treat newspapers like a lot of their other properties, where they think they could get like 30% profit margin. Apparently, newspapers that usually about 10, 15, 20% profit margins are great, but in a circumstance where their conglomerates may have a bunch of other properties they're doing at 30%, and suddenly you've got this other newspaper that's straggling along at 10 or 15 or 20%, and you're thinking, you could be doing better. So let's take some actions to try to reduce that, except that those actions actually wind up making newspapers worse, less responsive, less able to, less staffed, less able to respond promptly to local concerns or local stories and so forth. And so there's that factor there as well.
Well, I think that's really the factor that resonates most with me. Through this period, we've seen now, what I would, call the era of consolidation beginning in 1996 when the FCC let loose the wild horses in the radio dial. And we got the companies like Clear Channel owning 1,200 stations nationwide when they would never have been allowed to have such a huge stable in the past. And we have seen the kind of consolidation we've seen with Tribune and with other companies. It's not just, that big is bad. What it is that it comes along with this downsizing, that it comes with the shaving off of quality of journalism, with fewer investigative reports, with fewer working reporters, with fewer working editors, with less time and effort dedicated to getting, digging deep into things. Or there being less broad coverage, where the coverage goes to the same big stories. And in large metroplexes like Los Angeles or Chicago or in New York, you see less coverage in smaller communities, in neighborhoods. And it's only about the, if it bleeds, it leads much more so. Not to mention the livelihood of all these people who lose their jobs. So even if Tribune Company ends up breaking apart from what it currently is, and isn't so conglomerated, and maybe some of the chief properties like the Chicago Tribune, which to Chicago is like the New York Times in New York or the LA Times, are sold off and become independent again, look, they're almost skeletons. They're almost shadows of their former self. And that has real impacts, I think, on the communities where they are in terms of information, in terms of the people who relied upon it. And I wonder if, you know, these companies aren't partially responsible for driving people away into the internet.
That's the thing here. It's like, and in fact, I just had an argument about this, actually right before we came on air with my sister, in fact, that there's this tension there about whether or not that, guys, who's to blame here? And in the argument, you might say, well, it's you pesky media activists who, you know, blocked those rules that would have otherwise prevented the Tribune from basically continuing on its profitable ways, and it's now fallen like a house of cards, and it's all your fault. But we're not, you know, stockholders in this massive enterprise. We weren't cutting jobs and pensions left and right. We weren't shaving off. We weren't doing layoffs. We weren't trying to gin the system with regards to media ownership.
And we weren't deciding that double-digit profits weren't enough. Mm-hmm. We weren't the ones deciding that double-digit profits weren't enough.
Absolutely. No, I mean, that's another thing. It's like,
well, we're getting to the end of the show here, Mitchell. So I do really appreciate you coming on and talking a bit about this. And I want to direct people to a very short, concise post on the Chicago Media Action website you just published, which I think really lays this out in bullet points in a way that just anyone is going to be able to immediately get, and then with lots of good links that they can follow up on, and that's at chicagomediaaction.org. And as well, you have your own website, Mitchell?
That's right. SZCZ.org. The first four letters of my last name, SamZebraCatZebra.org. It's my own website where a lot of the other non-CMA-related stuff that I do is there, including my own radio show.
Yep.
I am the host of a weekly radio show on WHPK, 88.5 FM out of the University of Chicago, called The Ministry of Truth. All past episodes of my show, including a lot of media-related stuff, is there. So you can download that or listen on 88.5 or WHPK.org.
And if you want to listen to the live stream or you are in the south side of Chicago area, where would they hear it live?
88.5 FM if you are downtown or south of downtown, or online at WHPK.org.
And when does it air?
Thursdays at 1:30 in the afternoon.
All right, Mitchell. Thank you so much. Mitchell Shapanchik with the Ministry of Truth and also Chicago Media Action.
Thanks so much
for joining me.
You're very welcome, Paul. Thanks.
And that brings to a close this edition of the Media Geek Radio program. Please tune in one more week when I'll have more news and views on our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek Online at MediaGeek.net. It's home to the Media Geek blog with news and opinions and lots of stuff really just don't have time for on the radio program. The radio show is at radio.mediageek.net. You can download, you can listen to it in your browser, or you can subscribe to the podcast so that you can get automatically downloaded to your MP3 player or computer, all there at radio.mediageek.net. And Media Geek is produced at WNUR FM, Evanston, Chicago, in Lewis Hall at Northwestern University, 89.3 FM. And is also heard on such great stations as WEFT and 90.1 FM in Champaign, Urbana, Illinois, and Radio Free Moscow at KRFP, 92.5 FM in Moscow, Idaho. And, of course, if you have any comments about the program, please send them to me, Paul, at MediaGeek.net. Thanks for tuning in.